The housing market is hot. There are three times more buyers than sellers. It's more important now than ever to make sure you have your financing in place before you even find the house. Get pre-approved today at thehomeloanexpert.com. The Home Loan Expert, LLC.
It may be my favorite thing about football this time of year is that, you know, because we've had football now for 2 weeks every night, NFL college. And we've got it all the way through November 20th, so another whole week of football every night. The best part of it is sometimes games surprise you, and nobody wanted to watch the Giants and 49ers, but all of a sudden you're flipping around, you're like, well, I'm going to turn it on and see what's happening. And you turn it on, all of a sudden you got an entertaining football game, and you're watching Mullins with his ties to Spain Park, and you're watching Eli Manning with his ties to the SEC, and it goes down to the wire, and it's an entertaining game, and Eli Manning actually finishes one, and they win it 27-23, Giants over the 49ers. And then you start thinking, man, the Giants are in that division that could have a 9-7 champion. If they don't lose again, that team could be in the mix at the end.
Well, OBJ said, look, the goal is to win 8 straight to end the season. I don't think this team is capable of that. But if they win 8 straight, they'll be very much in the mix to win the NFC East. Here's one thing I would say about both New York and San Francisco. Both of these teams are really bad, but if you worry about teams tanking it for a first overall pick, that's not what you're seeing with these two organizations.
Not
both these
all.
Teams wanted to win last
night. Yeah, I mean, last night probably clinched that first pick for Oakland. I mean, that's what happened last night.
Yeah, I would
night.
Think so. I mean, when you look at the Vegas odds right now, Oakland is by far your favorite to get the number one overall pick.
I mean, they're 1-8. And now with the Giants at 2-7, you're going to have a two-game swing there. And the Niners are 2-8. You're going to have a two-game swing. And I don't know who Oakland's going to beat to get to two wins. That is a bad
football
team.
You know, the interesting thing, and look, and I don't know if Derek Carr is going to be the answer in Oakland, the answer that he looked to be a couple of years ago. I know John Gruden still is high on Derek Carr. We know San Francisco's got their guy with Garoppolo when he comes back from injury. New York's the team that needs a quarterback. So if any team was going to tank this thing, and try to set it up for the first overall pick. Now, I don't know if there's going to be that franchise guy next year. I've already heard people talking about in 2 years, Tua's going to be that guy.
Tank for Tua.
Tanking for Tua. But if New York, if you were ever worried about them tanking for a quarterback, we didn't see that last night. They came to play.
And it's commonplace the last 3 or 4 years in sports talk radio or in those debate shows on ESPN that anytime the Giants blow a last-second drive or are successful on a last-second drive, you debate Eli Manning's place in football history. I was surprised to see that was his 36th game-winning drive since 2004. Only Big Ben and Drew have more.
Well, I mean,
I guess he has a lot of opportunities. Tom Brady would tell you, don't be losing late. You don't get a lot of those drives, I guess.
I mean, what is that, 2.5 a year?
2.5 a year.
Yeah.
But that's game winning. That's not game losing drive.
No, that's good. I mean, obviously, Eli, we forget some of the credentials that Eli's got. I mean, obviously, the two Super Bowls jump out, but this has been a high-quality quarterback for a long time. The last 3 years have not been good to Eli Manning. He's really showed his age, and it doesn't help that you've got guys like Drew Brees and Tom Brady in their 40s doing what they're able to do. But Eli Manning, his football mortality is obviously showed, but give him credit last night. You know, they found a way to get a win on the road last night against, again, a San Francisco team that comes to play every week. They're not good. Defense is completely banged up. They're on their third-string quarterback, but they try to play.
But he did look bad at times.
Who, Eli or Nick Mullins?
No, Eli Manning. You look up here, and they just showed one on the NFL Network when Odell Beckham had a double coverage beat by 5 yards, and he underthrows it by like 15 yards. And that's the problem with Eli. They put the stat up that I think I'm correct about this. The only other quarterback in the Hall of Fame with a losing record is Joe Namath.
And I can believe that.
And Eli Manning's 2 games, maybe 3 games now, above that line.
Well, Eli would have no shot again. You know, it was one of those debates back in, 10 years ago. Will Eli get in because of his name? And the answer is yeah. I mean, would you guys agree if it's not Eli Manning?
He's a two-time Super Bowl champion. That makes a difference.
Well, yeah, he's
almost Terry Bradshaw.
Yeah, I think Jim Plunkett is the only two-time champion not to be in, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, but Bradshaw's got, what, 4 or 5? He's got 5.
Yeah, Bradshaw's got a lot.
He got 4.
Okay. Yeah. Well, so he's got 4. So, I mean, there's a big difference in 4 and 2. I don't think there's any chance Eli's in without his name.
Maybe. But he'll be in. And they were debating that last night. I guess I was surprised that Joe had I knew he didn't have, wow numbers because of the injuries. I guess I was surprised he had a losing record.
62-63-4 over his career.
For Namath?
For Namath.
Yeah, without his charisma. Without Super Bowl one, well, that victory, obviously.
You're right. And, I mean, Joe Namath, in so many ways, I mean, he's got a career 50% completion percentage. It was a different game then, man.
It was. But can we do poll question, Dreamland? Eli Manning in or will he get in because of name? I don't know the best way to actually phrase
in
that.
In on accomplishment or in because of name, I guess would be your two choices.
Yeah, absolutely. Dreamland Barbecue poll questions brought to you by our friends at Dreamland.
It's hard to believe. My little guy had me listening to Holly Channel 4 again last night.
Right.
And I'm like, it's way too early for this.
No, it's never too early.
Dashing through the snow.
They disagree. My house, by the way, you guys would be blown away, is totally decorated now already for Christmas.
No, it's not. Trees. The first tree went up in my house last night. My wife put the tree up down in my sports room.
Yeah, I've got the tree up in the sports room. It's the tacky tree. Now, we can't have the real tree up yet because obviously it'll dry out and die. But we did a story trash on the table last week, and it talked about you're more in a festive mood. Morale is better when you have the Christmas decorations.
Yeah.
So the kids talked me into busting them out. I didn't fight it this year, so they're out.
113, 110, and 0 now for Eli.
Yeah.
So he's going to have to fight to stay above 500. I mean, that's going to be a fight for the rest of his career.
I don't think he'll be there.
To keep that record above 500.
They're putting up Christmas decorations, Rockstar. Meanwhile, we had our flooring redone on the main level. I was moving.
Good God, how long is it taking you to get to live in a castle?
No, it's done. It's done.
But I had to dig the moat first.
Oh, my God.
It was done. Now I'm moving furniture back, and I don't like doing that.
Really?
And last night, we're moving the big China cabinet. We still have one of those in the formal dining room we never use except in a few weeks.
Formal.
So I'm sitting there watching the butlers move. No, I'm kidding. So I've got to move this thing, and it looks pretty light.
I know you miss your former tenant.
Yes. So I'm about to move this thing with the wife at the other end, and I go to lift it up, and I can't budge it. I mean, I can't slide it because it's still sitting on pieces of carpet where I can slide it over the hardwoods. I can't move it. It's like a sled with the entire offensive line of the Giants standing on it.
Don't rock it. That thing falls forward.
Ooh, and I was bad news.
What's in this thing? And she goes, oh, all the China and such are down in it.
Yeah, everything we don't use.
And I said, why is it in it? And I've got to move it now. Take it all out. And then she opened the drawers and showed me that it would take hours to move it all out. It was one of those
pieces.
You know
what? It looks good right there.
Yeah.
It's in front of the TV.
Yeah. Caddy corner, right in the middle of where the table needs to go.
Does anyone use China?
No, we never do.
Maybe once or twice a year.
I don't know, next Thursday.
We've got dishes we were given for our back in the old days, kids. They used to give you a China set. People would do that for your weddings, right? Different pieces of this,
gravy boat.
Yeah, the gravy boat and stuff. Stuff we have never used once. Never used once.
Well, you're in one of those supper clubs, one of those uppity supper clubs, which I've never been in. I'm surprised Brown isn't between the or behind the guarded gate.
Yeah.
But do you guys never bust it out for the supper club?
No. That's a Red Solo Cup night. That's more of a country club.
About once a year, we'll use the Christmas china. Well, during the holidays, and then maybe once a year the nice china. Normally at Valentine's. Family Valentine's.
Do you do the uppity gravy in one of the cups?
I don't think we've ever used a gravy boat. Maybe we do a Thanksgiving. Gotta have a gravy boat at Thanksgiving with the giblet gravy.
We just keep it in a bowl.
Redneck.
Sitting there on the island as we walk by. We're self-serve.
Redneck.
We're drive-through on Thanksgiving.
Oh, we do the redneck too because I just dumped the Ocean Spray cranberry.
Because it's better.
It's still got the label on the bottom of it.
It's better.
Oh, it is.
It's better than the homemade. We threw out another Dreamland Barbecue poll question as well because I wish Saber was here for this because he could explain it more in depth, but Stan Lee died at the age of 95. He's the guy, the visionary, who came up with the Marvel comics opposite of DC and Superman and Batman and all that. As you would imagine, DC was kicking everybody's tail in the comic book world back in the 50s with Batman and Superman and all those. And so Stan Lee worked with Marvel Comics, and they came to him and said, we need something to compete. So that's when he came up with the Fantastic Four. Later on, Spider-Man, Hulk, Iron Man, Thor, X-Men, Daredevil. So we've thrown out in honor of 95-year-old Stan Lee.
What a run, by the way. And, he was a guy that did cameos in all of these Marvel movies. Now, some of them better than others.
Right.
But made a cameo in every single one of them.
So he ended up, saving Marvel Comics. In fact, making them pass DC for a period of time. And now this whole movie genre has kicked off with the Marvel Universe.
And it's not even close how much better the Marvel movies are than the DC.
100%. So we are asking you on your Dreamland Barbecue poll question about that, what is your favorite Marvel character? Now, I just gave you the, you know, I didn't give you the Fantastic Four. I gave you the other four that are very popular. Feel free to write in. I don't have X-Men on there, and I don't have Captain America. So I'm getting a lot of votes for that. But of the four that you can jump in and vote, you can do that at the Dreamland Barbecue poll question. Maybe I put the wrong four in there. I don't know. But I threw in Spider-Man, Hulk,
Joker,
Iron Man, and Daredevil.
Yeah, I don't think Daredevil needs to be there.
Well, wow. I think you'll be surprised. I think Daredevil wins this.
You're insane.
Isn't he the one that cusses and is funny?
Cusses?
No. Daredevil is the blind
Deadpool.
Lawyer.
Oh, that's Deadpool. Marvel!
Daredevil was a bad Ben Affleck film that I never even paid attention to.
Well, are we just going to overlook the fact that Dunaway left out Captain America?
Yeah, I think Captain America needs to be there.
How is Captain America even in the top four?
He's Captain America.
Well, I mean, he's a box office draw, man. Girls like the Chris Evans guy.
Girls, that's what I'm saying. We've got a predominantly man audience.
I think
here.
Thor would be a better selection than Daredevil.
I mean,
Wolverine would be better.
You guys are just going for the hunky guys?
Sure.
No, I'm just saying. I think the popularity. I think Daredevil was one of the worst.
He's a blind attorney. That's what he is.
I object, Your Honor.
Robbie, you're not in court, sir.
Robbie writes in and says, "Captain America actually taught me so much about being a good person as a child."
Boom. It's good lessons.
What do you guys think Stan Lee was worth?
I don't know, but before you do that, this is an amazing stat.
Well, rip that other poll question down, Brown. You got the access quickly.
Cumulative worldwide gross box office in films they appeared in. Tom Cruise, $6.8 billion. Harrison Ford, $9.4 billion. Stan Lee, $24.8 billion. That's the gross of the movies he appeared in.
Yeah, that franchise right now is just killing it.
And he appeared in them because of him.
Well, and he should be worth more money then. I mean, he's worth about $80 million.
That ain't bad. poor soul.
95 years old.
95 is a good run. And
I wish I'd have befriended him last year.
I do love that cussing Daredevil guy.
You know there's always somebody that slips in on that final year.
But do you notice he would I wish I'd befriended him last year.
Yeah, I only wanted
Lance
to give a year.
Want the long-term commitment.
Last week.
I wish I was his lifelong friend. No, I wish I'd slipped in last year just enough to have a chance at getting some of that money.
I just want a piece.
Giving him a good year.
Rework the Dreamland Barbecue poll question on Stan Lee, who passes at the age of 95, giving so much to so many. The flawed human hero rock star is what I read this morning.
He created the flawed human hero.
Batman and Superman and all those.
All had flaws.
Yeah. He made the flawed human hero.
What was Batman? I mean, he liked women. What else?
Yeah, a lot of money.
It seemed like he sipped on a bourbon when he sat in that cave occasionally.
Those aren't really flaws, are they?
Yeah. I bet he gambled.
They're quirks.
Oh, sure.
I mean, in the Batcave, I mean, that's another good poll question. Do you think Batman gambled on sports? He had all those TVs way before everyone else did.
There's no doubt. But here would be the conflict of interest, because most of the people that he was dealing with was Gotham corruption. So one of those overlords, whether it was the Penguin or the Joker, they probably were running the books.
Great point. Hey, Uncle Jesse is saving me here. He says, Daredevil on Netflix, one of the best shows on TV. Do not watch with your kids.
Mm.
Not suitable for work. So, boom. I may know what I'm talking
about. He just saved
you.
Yep.
I don't think so.
Mitch says the Batcave for Batman was his hideout from the book he's looking for.
He
built that in right there. Basketball last night, Samford, a winner over Kennesaw, 74-60. They're 3-0 to start the season. Penn State beat Jacksonville State up in Happy Valley 76-61 last night. Troy a loser, Alabama A&M a loser last night in local basketball. The biggest game of the night, at least performance-wise, came in Kansas, where LeGerald Vick scored 32. He set a Big 12 record, hitting 8 of 8 from three-point land. That's the most three-pointers made without a miss in Big 12 history as they beat Vermont 84-68 in the battle for the old golden syrup.
I think of weird things. I was watching Jack State Penn State last night. They don't draw flies for basketball, Penn State.
Right.
And I was thinking, I bet you there is no bigger discrepancy between average football crowd and average basketball crowd than Penn State. In all of college sports, I bet you there's no bigger discrepancy.
You'd be going on percentage of stadium full.
No, I just arena full. Total number, total average, like average number for a football game versus average number for a basketball game. I bet you at the end of the year, the discrepancy is bigger for Penn State than any school in America.
Okay.
I mean, there was nobody at that Penn State Jack State game.
I don't think people just show up for games anymore, because I was randomly watching DePaul and Morgan State last night.
That is random. What channel was that on?
It was on CBS Sports Network, because I was watching the Butler game before and I just kept it on one of the TVs.
Right.
But I was just noticing, and you guys remember how good that DePaul program was at one particular time with Rod Strickland. And
oh, yeah.
I mean, you had Mark Aguirre. You had some great players, and that used to be a packed house in Chicago. And I'm not exaggerating. There might have been 100 people in that building last night.
Were they playing at United Center, or were they on campus?
It was on campus.
They're on campus?
Well, yeah.
They don't.
Sad.
Scoobs on a cell phone. We talk a little football with you now. 6:21. Nick Saban in a second. Hey, Scoobs, how are you?
I'm doing well, guys. How are you?
Awesome.
I want to get into a couple of things. Dealing with what Saban said yesterday, dealing with Tua, my first question to you guys is, series-wise, what do you see Tua playing? One, two, three? What's
all
your...
Let's do this, Scoop, since we're all good friends here. You're such part of the show now. Can I put you on hold so everyone else can... I can do Radio Geek here and make sure everyone hears what Nick Saban says first, and then we'll come back and we'll start your call all over again. Let's do that. Okay,
you can start the elevator music. I'm on hold.
Okay, Scoobs is on hold. Nick Saban yesterday. It was my fault. I should have gone to Scoobs first. Here is Nick Saban yesterday. We left the question in, so this is unedited, so you don't think we're trying to make reporter and or Nick Saban look any different than the way it played yesterday in Tuscaloosa. It's a valid question, and the answer you expected. Here we go.
Given the amount of hits that Tua has been taking recently, is there any consideration at all this week to whether you said you didn't want to limit reps of practice, but limit snaps or in the game? Is there any consideration to limiting some of that?
No. No, why would we do that? I mean, say this was not an important game or he doesn't need to play or, I mean, I think we need to do a better job of the people playing around him, doing what they're supposed to do so he doesn't get hit. And he needs to do a better job of stepping up in the pocket and getting rid of the ball, which he had several opportunities to do. So, you know, some of these hits can be avoided just by better execution. And I think that's what we're going to focus on, you know, not trying to take a guy out of the game so he can't improve or do what he needs to do to get better. Or we need to do what we need to do to get better as a team and develop some confidence in each other.
Well, given the amount of hits that...
If that's the argument, why don't they play him in the fourth quarter?
Trying not to run the score up at that point.
But as we bring Scoobs back in here, Scoobs, the traditional way Nick Saban does this, if everyone's healthy, is he plays the first half and the first drive of the third quarter. It's always been very important to Nick Saban since the beginning, that first drive coming out of the locker room in the second half to play your starters. I think it has to do with halftime adjustments and coming out of the locker room and just keeping in a rhythm there, and then he usually starts substitution. To answer your question again, I would be surprised if we see him that deep into the game this week.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I don't really see him past halftime, but that's just me.
I'm actually surprised he's going to play.
But here's the weird thing, Scoobs. You know, and this is, I've always thought that this is an interesting spot for Nick Saban, this crappy tweener week we've always called it, because Nick Saban loves to try to convince you and convince his players. We've talked to his former players all the time. John Parker will tell us this. Barrett's told us this, that he tries to convince them that Charleston Southern and the Citadel is just as important as LSU and Auburn. And it's hard to sell that message if you also sit your starters that aren't really too injured to play. If you sit a starter that's healthy enough to play against LSU, against the Citadel, it's hard to sell that message that every game has a life of its own and they're all the same.
But I get that. But when you watch the beating that Tua took this past week,
I don't disagree at all.
A legitimate argument that you actually can sit him and rest him based on where the knee has been the last couple of months.
And I'm not sure that won't happen by the time we get to Saturday. That
Tua tweaked it in practice, quote-unquote? Yeah,
that we can't – I don't know if he would say that. Just, you know, we've evaluated him. The medical staff has said we thought no announcement before, but just as he doesn't play in the first half, you get to the post game and he says the medical staff said he wasn't ready to go. It was best not to go.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. I heard something yesterday on Ryan Fowler. Now, he was just given a quote-unquote, guess, but he thinks it could possibly even be a meniscus, but that's a whole nother story. But going to my last two questions, would you say sometimes last night that you've seen a little bit of vintage Eli? Would you agree with me on that?
A little bit of what with Eli?
Vintage.
Vintage
a
Eli?
Little bit of vintage, a little bit of Eli. Really?
Well, what is vintage Eli?
The what? Shrug?
Well, just the throws that he was making.
No, 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 no. I mean, what era of Eli do you consider vintage?
Well, let's see.
The two Super Bowl 07, years?
07 to 09, maybe there was some vintage Eli.
Yeah, the Super Bowl years, those great runs in the playoffs where they sneak in and win every, get everything on the road. When you see the underthrows, when you have an elite, I mean, I give a lot of respect to Odell Beckham Jr. last night because he's the guy they brought out in the post game on the ESPN forum they do on the field there, and they talk with everyone. He was very team-oriented and complimentary. You know, there was a chance for him to say, listen, you know, it's Eli's end of his road, and obviously he doesn't have the arm strength. He didn't say anything like that, but there were times in that game that one of the greatest receivers in the game is wide open, and he can't get the ball to him. Can't get it to him.
Yeah, I mean, right now, for me, Eli is a 20 to 30 quarterback. I mean, he's definitely in the bottom 30%, and I don't think it's going to get any better, and I'm going to be surprised if Eli plays next year, and I don't know what direction New York goes in. Cal Laletta, the rookie out of Richmond, you know, they were going to give him some reps, and he got in that, you know, traffic trouble a couple of weeks ago. Kind of a weird story there. So I don't really know the direction of this team right now. I think they're probably kicking themselves from passing on a quarterback this past draft.
I will tell you that the passing of David Pearson hit home yesterday. He dies at the age of 83. But this was one of the guys that I don't remember racing a whole lot. But I do remember other people talking about David Pearson and how cool he was and what a rival he was of Richard Petty. I was never a Petty guy, right? Looking back history-wise, I always thought Richard Petty was, I know he's the winningest, he's the king and the winningest.
Here we go. Right? Get ready, Rockstar.
I was a Kyle Petty guy.
But right time, right place for me, Richard Petty. I think there were a lot of people that could have had the backing of STP, David Pearson for one, and could have won as many races as Richard Petty.
You've always claimed his record is a little overrated based on how many times he just raced random midweek races.
But also with the fact that he had such a backing from the manufacturer.
Right, right. Something that a lot of people didn't
know. Say the guys in Hueytown, Alabama didn't have.
Correct.
Right? So he was racing a thoroughbred against the mules sometimes.
Okay.
That was my belief. David Pearson battled him, and I always liked the history of David Pearson a lot. He passed away at the age of 83, three-time NASCAR champion, 105 race wins. He's a Hall of Famer, and we appreciated the memories last night for the great David Pearson. Ronald Acuna Jr., no surprise there, the National League Rookie of the Year yesterday. Shohei Ohtani held off a couple of Yankees to be the American League Rookie of the Year. So injured throughout, and we didn't get to see the pitching hitting double dip all year long. I guess I'm not surprised that Ohtani won that, but I thought there was a chance he was going to lose that.
Well, even it really wasn't close. Acuna, obviously more votes, but Ohtani still dominates, but still becomes the first player since Babe Ruth in 1919 to pitch at least 50 innings and hit at least 15 home runs. Now, with the Tommy John surgery, he won't pitch next year. He'll just be DH'ing for the Angels. But this is a guy that I think he almost lived up to expectations this year.
Mark writes back in and says, Dunaway, Daredevil was a legit choice since his Netflix show is so popular. Hulk was probably the bad choice on that.
This is why we don't do comic book
talk. Yeah.
I mean, if you just read our mentions.
Do you think Hulk could have taken Macho Man Randy Savage?
Are we going WWF rules?
I got to be honest, man. I didn't realize Daredevil had a Netflix series.
I think every single superhero now has one. The Punisher has one.
John says
Green Arrow has one.
John says Thor is better than three of our four choices. Fred says Captain America was actually created by Joe Simon and Jack Kirby.
We all know that.
That's why I left it off. That's why I left it off. I
mean, Joe and Jack, obviously.
But you guys were spot on that Daredevil, I was thinking of Deadpool. That was 100%. I stumbled into a good selection.
That they couldn't get through Deadpool. Like the first scene, I had to shut it down.
I couldn't do it.
I mean, did you guys see Deadpool?
Nope.
T.J. Miller was in it, though.
T.J. Miller was. He's not going to be a number three. I don't know where T.J. is right now, unfortunately. But to me, Logan, by far the best comic book movie ever.
Crap we got wrong happens right now from this past week in sports.
Let's face it. We got a lot of things right this season.
Touchdown!
Are you kidding me?
Pick six! Pick six!
But we also got a couple things wrong, too.
Pass deflected, and it's picked off!
See you later!
Oh! Our bad.
I just saw magic.
Time now for Crap We Got Wrong.
I just thought Magic's one of my favorites.
That's the Florida guy right after the Hail Mary, wasn't it?
I just saw Magic. I got a lot right again this week. Kentucky losing at Tennessee. I called that out. So why don't you start us off, Brown? What'd you get wrong?
Brown, you probably got a lot wrong.
I'll see if I can find something I got wrong. Go ahead.
Well, I got wrong Kentucky in two aspects. Number one, I thought Tennessee would lose to Kentucky. And we were just talking about this in the break, Lance. I don't know why, because I'm a layman public player. Kentucky never wins at Neyland Stadium. Why would I think they're going to start now, right? They are so deficient on offense.
1984, Brown.
I know. I mean, just, they never win there. I mean, Tennessee owns them overall in that series, but they definitely own them at Neyland Stadium. So I don't know why I jumped on Kentucky there. It seems so easy. I should have known if it makes sense, it doesn't make sense, or whatever Uncle Vinny always says to me, tells me. But on a broader sense, Ohio State is still no good, but I am ready to concede the fact that Kentucky probably wouldn't beat them right now. Maybe earlier in the season they would have, but at this point, it would be a really, really ugly game, but Ohio State would probably beat them in a close one.
Dunaway, as you ponder on your mistakes, don't forget the haircut in the china cabinet from last week.
That's right. That's right. The haircut was one, for
sure.
Our
little daredevil.
But I'm going to go Battle of Bedlam. I thought Oklahoma would run Oklahoma State off the field, and this is one of those things to look for tonight in the college football rankings. Oklahoma's got a great offense, but this defense, and I don't know if this is right, and I'm trying to check this, but I read this morning, with the 39 first downs they gave up to Oklahoma State, that is the most first downs that have been put on any FBS defense this entire year. That's how bad the defense was. They gave up 20 first downs on first down. They gave up 640 yards. Taylor Cornelius, like a Heisman Trophy finalist, they were lucky to survive that game. So I was totally wrong. I thought Oklahoma would come out and make a statement against Mike Gundy. Didn't happen. So, totally wrong on that.
So, they gave up, 20 first downs on first down plays.
On first down plays.
That is remarkable.
Yeah.
That is not good. I didn't make a mistake with the haircut, no doubt. And I thought Colorado would beat Washington State, and it wasn't close. 31-7.
Yeah, I never saw that.
Boulder, I thought Colorado would win that game.
Both of you said that. I never saw that one coming.
I was going to get to that in a minute.
Yeah. And again, I brought the stat up yesterday, how many different receivers are completing the ball too, but Gardner Minshew on the road, 35 of 58, 335 and a couple of touchdowns. That was a strong, strong stat line.
Yeah, I'll follow that up. You know, Colorado, if you watch that game, the way it kind of unfolded, it wasn't a bad crowd. You know, they started out 5-0 this year, lost four consecutive games. Now they've lost five, but they jump up 7-0 and their defense seemed to come to play. And the problem was Colorado just continued to turn the football over. And Chenault's not 100%, had over 100 yards, but he's still not that electrifying player we saw the first 5 weeks of the season. And Minshew just continues to pick apart defenses. But they go on a 31-0 run to close out that game. And Washington State is another one of these teams to look at. I know Herb Street talked about it last week. It's going to be tough for them to continue to move up. But when you get Oklahoma struggling like they are defensively, and Oklahoma or West Virginia, they're going to beat each other up over the next month. Washington State is going to have some opportunities.
You know, on the heels of that game, there are reports now that McIntyre is going to be out at the end of the year.
I could see it.
And I mean, that was the coach of the year 2 years ago.
But I would ask you guys this. That is not the job that we once saw in the early 90s.
No.
I think even our boy Joel Klatt would tell us, you know, lack of athletic program funding. There's a lot of things that go into that. Geography, when you're talking about the Pac-12. I always viewed it as a pretty good job growing up. Really cool campus, if you guys have ever been. I just wonder where that job will be in pecking order for some of these up-and-coming coaches.
Well, if it opens up right now, it'll be behind Louisville, but I don't think Louisville's truly open. I think that is Jeff Brohm, and it's already been worked out behind the behind closed doors. I think it would be a pretty sweet job in the Pac-12 that looks like it's easy to get to the top there in that division. And I think they fixed the funding problem, which may be, you know, one of the reasons why they're going to make a move now. They think they can get somebody else. McIntyre doesn't get along with the upper.
Well, and
he protected one of his own, and that's going to kill him.
Yeah, I mean, there was an off-field issue, too, that's going to drag him down. Yeah. I mean, this is our measuring stick now. If you're Bill Clark or Neil Brown, do you take that job?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so.
100%.
I mean, it's a Pac-12 job.
I mean, I don't know if Colorado comes to the deep south.
Oh, I wouldn't think so.
It's a traditional Southern coach.
Yeah, but I'm just asking as a measuring stick.
Yeah, but I'll tell you this. If you're Neil Brown or Bill Clark and you take your family out there, they're going to fall in love with it.
Absolutely.
That's a beautiful place.
Anything else you got wrong?
Yeah, I got one more. Michigan State, I thought, would beat Ohio State. If you did not watch that game and you look at the final score, it looked like Ohio State righted themselves a little bit.
It was a one-possession game.
Well, it was an awful football game. Here's the I don't know that I've ever seen this. And if you were watching, and if you stuck with it at this point, God bless you. You had some sort of interest in the game, probably gambling. Michigan State in the third quarter was down one and took a safety. It was 7-6. Have you ever seen a team take a safety when they're down?
But I think that shows you, and you know, people that I talked to, and you know, I ended up backing Michigan State, and people said I was insane because lack of production offensively, and they can't get quarterback right, and they don't have any playmakers. They've got no wide receivers right now. So I think Mark D'Antonio was that desperate to just change field position, but I've never seen that before in my life. But I mean, only 12 first downs, 54 rushing yards.
Michigan State's offense is awful. It's
terrible.
Speaking of Urban Meyer, as you would imagine, after the Zach Smith Twitter escapades over the weekend talking about Tom Herman and Tom Herman's wife, Urban Meyer, in his news conference yesterday, got a question about that and his former GA, DJ Durkin. Here is Urban Meyer just having a blast. I mean, a freaking blast at his news conference yesterday.
Former coach Zach Smith is making some allegations out there about a former coach he used to work with, Tom Herman, on Twitter last night and stuff. Are you aware of that? Do you just move on from that? What's just sort of your approach to that?
Move on.
Any reaction to DJ Durkin's ouster there and the responsibility a head coach bears when he may or may not be in the presence of this incident?
Move on.
He was on your staff.
He was my GA. He was my... very close with him and his family, like very close.
Have you talked with him? I mean, can you
sure?
I mean, what's next? The
thank you, Herb.
The Kevin Bacon 3 degrees of separation from Bobby Petrino. There's got to be a connection, right?
Somebody bought your used motorcycle.
You know what's crazy is Urban was asking about the Tom Herman situation. There was another coach that did a press conference yesterday that wasn't asking about it. His name is Tom Herman.
Yeah.
At least Urban was asking about it.
Which is a little strange. I would ask you guys this because Nick Saban does seem to get the best of media. And Urban Meyer used to be on the Nick Saban side of that where he could bully people a little bit. He seems pushed in a corner now.
Yeah. Injured animal.
Barstool Sports had a video clip they put out. I assume, according to our listeners, it was from yesterday. Did you guys see... Barstool sent it out yesterday. We assume it was Tua yesterday working out by himself in the rain. And as one of our listeners who sent it to me said, I hope the guy has a new place to live because it's part of your agreement, right, not to shoot videotape practice from those apartments?
Yeah. If you've got one of those apartments that overlooks the practice field, the way I understand it, it is within your lease that when you sign the lease to the apartment, I'm not even certain you can be on the patio during practice hours.
Could that possibly be a DirecTV guy up there?
Balcony.
Yeah. Meddling around.
Well, it wasn't practice. He was out there working by himself. So yeah. Technically, it may be fine print, but...
He's lucky the sniper didn't get him.
The sniper, like on top of the White House?
Yeah, he's on top of the practice facility.
Cedric, did you miss? The Heisman Trophy race was such a given. It was taken off the board for a while in Vegas. Now, too, was... numbers against these really better defenses are coming back closer to the norm in college football against LSU and Mississippi State. The injury is factoring in here. So Oklahoma doing what you would do if you had a guy like Kyler Murray, you're promoting him. They came up with this stat yesterday. Mike Hauk is the guy in charge of communications at Oklahoma. If you project out the total offensive numbers, if Tua Tagovailoa had played equal snaps to Kyler Murray, Kyler's played a lot more. So that's one of the excuses that are given for Murray's numbers being higher, right? He's played more.
Yeah, defense keeps them in every game, basically.
Yeah, he has to keep playing because his defense is water. Tua Tagovailoa projects out with the same number of snaps as Kyler Murray to 3,515 yards of total offense to date. And Oklahoma points out that Kyler Murray at this moment has 3,678 yards. I don't know if that's enough to start swaying your Heisman vote or anything.
That's an insignificant amount.
I will tell you this, and this has been for a while now. And look, Kyler Murray's numbers came back a little bit against a bad Oklahoma State defense based on where they had been. I mean, he was still 21-29, 349 and a touch. But still, this is a guy that's 3 or 4 touchdowns every time out. I would have Kyler Murray at number 2, and that's been for weeks now. But to me, it's Tua, and then it's a huge gap. But, you know, I brought this up last week. Kyler's numbers are better than Baker Mayfield's numbers were at this time last year. He's putting up tremendous numbers, But Oklahoma is just not the team that maybe scared you like they did last year. I mean, Oklahoma was a team last year that could legitimately win a championship. If they would have gotten by Georgia, I think Baker Mayfield would have given Alabama's defense a lot of trouble. I don't know how you guys feel about that, but Jalen Hurts would have gotten the start. Who knows? Bama could have been down 14-21 at halftime.
Yeah, I mean, I think the weird thing about it is I think Alabama Lance would have moved the ball okay on Oklahoma.
Probably.
Their defense was bad last year. You may never have seen Tua Tagovailoa because I don't think the Oklahoma defense could have done to Alabama what the Georgia defense did. So I don't know that Hurts ever gets forced out of that game. Alabama may or may not have won it with Hurts in there, but it could be a totally different situation right now.
This is a weird Heisman race.
It really is because if
Texas was undefeated, Brown, Sam Ellinger would be right there in the mix.
But if you just look at like passing yardage, neither of these guys are particularly close to the top. I mean, your leading passer in the country right now, based on yardage, is Gardner Minshew. Do you know who's second?
Well, Gardner should be in New York.
Right. I don't know if he will be. Do you know who is second just on passing yardage?
Mackenzie Milton took time off.
Cornelius?
Jordan Tamu.
Oh, how about that?
At Ole Miss. Just on pure passing yardage is second. But
where are Dungy and Haskins?
I guess Dungy. Haskins is third. Dungy has fallen off.
Yeah.
Cole McDonald fourth, Cornelius fifth. But, I mean, you got to go all the way down to eighth to find Kyler Murray, and Tua Tagovailoa is 23rd. Now, again, there are reasons he's 23rd. Primarily, no fourth quarter play.
Will Quinnen Williams find himself on some ballots?
I've seen a lot of a push for that of late, which will still vote from Tua Tagovailoa because most of those ballots will probably be Southern ballots he's on.
If Ndamukong Suh was on a ballot, or actually was a Heisman finalist back in 2009, do you guys not believe that Quinnen's just been as dominant as Suh was that year for Nebraska?
Selection show later tonight, and the latest rankings from the College Football Playoff Committee back to its normal time tonight. But there is good basketball this evening on the SEC Network, a doubleheader, Memphis and LSU, 6 o'clock. Penny Hardaway in Memphis, get that program now because it's only getting better. Georgia Tech and Tennessee at 8 on ESPN2. Georgia on the road at Temple tonight. One note about Kelly Bryant. He's planned his second visit down to Auburn, the former Clemson quarterback. Arkansas is also one of the favorites to get him, but he's making a second visit to Auburn. Read into that whatever you will. Kelly Bryant says he'll make his announcement on December the 4th yesterday. So that dates the week right after the SEC championship game. So something to keep in mind as you look at that quarterback making his tour around the Southeast.
Do you think Auburn's a decent possibility?
Oh, I'm just saying he's making his second visit there. Why would you go back a second time if you're not thinking?
You know, the only thing that would concern me, you know, who's your coach going to be? More
right.
than likely it'd be Gus.
Who's your offensive coordinator going to be?
But, you know.
More likely it's going to be Gus.
There's a lot of regression from these quarterbacks when they come over and they play for Gus.
I just don't know. I wonder, even with the promise of Kelly Bryant, if Auburn fans even want this.
Yeah.
I get the feel they don't.
I'm not an Auburn guy.
Right.
Just outside looking into the program, I've said many times on the air how I feel about Bo Nix. And he's still a high school guy, but I think Bo Nix is going to project really well at Auburn. And I would rather go Bo Nix as a freshman than one and done, because Kelly Bryant's just got 1 year, right?
Yeah. I mean, he's a 1 year rental.
Guy, yeah.
Yep. 1 year rental for you.
So, whatever. By the way, Jeff Brohm was asked yesterday about the speculation of him taking the Louisville job. He said all the things that you would say if you were taking the Louisville job. not going to comment on speculation. Our guys know I'll be honest with them, that kind of stuff. Again, I think you don't write that check for Bobby Petrino in Louisville's situation unless you already have your guy, who I think is Jeff Brohm. He's that popular locally. All right, let's do the upset alert. We do it every Tuesday. It's week 12. We've only got one more week of this, really. Sadly, with rivalry week next week, we've come to the end, near the end here. But we got some good ones this week. Upset alert, Rockstar.
It's the Baumhauer's Victory Grill Spotlight.
College football upset alert.
All right, start us off, Brandon. Give us your upset alert.
I'm going to go to Yankee Stadium. Syracuse is catching 9 points against Notre Dame. And you heard Luganville just now talking about that game. Now, I will say the two gentlemen that share this room with me have told me this is a bad pick.
No.
Notre Dame will wear them out.
It's been picked for 2 weeks by everybody.
Uh-huh.
And that's why I think Notre Dame will wear them out.
So that makes it a bad pick.
Yeah, for 2 weeks, so everyone's been saying this.
Lance tells me I'm a layman with this pick.
Well, no, I think, here's the problem, Brown. I think that it's a lot of points for a team that is number 13, a team that has been as shaky as Notre Dame is, and a team that can score like Syracuse. But I think you've got everyone in the world that's not a Notre Dame fan this is that last hope to knock them out of the college football playoff. I don't think people want to see Notre Dame in this college football playoff.
Well, aside from that, I saw what Luganbill mentioned. When you watch them play, their front four is disruptive. You go back to the Clemson game, and it was Trevor Lawrence's first start. But even before he went out of that game injured, they were giving Clemson fits up front. They're ninth in the nation in sacks with 33. They're 24th in the nation with tackles for losses is 72. They've got a kid named Alton Robinson who's first in the ACC with sacks at 9. The good news for Notre Dame is they're not that bad at giving up sacks. They've only given up 14, and tackles for losses, they've only given up 52. So they're actually okay in both those categories. But I think that Syracuse front four gives Notre Dame fits. Not only do I think Syracuse covers those 9 points.
They don't need the points.
They don't, Rockstar.
Never do it, Browns.
Not one time has they
needed. Yeah, when have I ever missed on this? Syracuse plus the 9. Straight up against Notre Dame.
LT will save yours for the end for a dramatic effect. I'm gonna take a Conference USA team to upset an SEC team this week.
Is Liberty in Conference USA? No.
I'm going to take Conference USA, not the one you're thinking, though. I'm going to take Middle Tennessee plus 13.5 to scare the dickens out of Kentucky and maybe get the win at the end. Kentucky is broke, heartbroken after the loss to Georgia. They get beat on the road at Tennessee last week. People are asking, should they change that? Actually, Mark Stoops got asked this question yesterday. Should you change your offensive philosophy and move away from Eddie Gran as the coordinator there? The kind of questions you get when people forget where you were just 2 weeks ago. And now here comes stingy Middle Tennessee State University in with a veteran in Brent Stockstill at quarterback. All he was last week in a win over Texas El Paso was 31 of 40, 352, four touchdowns.
He can sling it.
Yeah, if it gets into a score fest, all Middle Tennessee State has to do is stop the run and Benny Snell. And I'll be honest with you. Where is Benny Snell these days?
Yeah, kind of disappeared.
Where is Benny Snell?
Well, I mean, look, defense coordinators did what they had to do. Terry Wilson's not going to beat you, and you do everything you can. You load up the box, and you take away Benny Snell, and Kentucky's not able to manufacture any points.
As Driving and Crying once said, I'm going straight to Snell. Benny Snell, a key factor in the game.
Is that what your mama said, Jimmy?
And I'll take Middle Tennessee State to scare Kentucky.
By the way, Snell he had 81 yards against Tennessee. It wasn't awful. But he's got to have more than that for them to win.
That doesn't get you in a Marvel comic, my friend.
Now, the only thing that causes for pause with me on this pick is this number is way too heavy and not enough respect for the UAB Blazers. This is a team that is rolling right now. 8 consecutive wins, and the defense is playing out of this world. Even with the offense putting them in some bad situations this past week, they find a way to totally shut down Southern Miss in the second half. They win the game in overtime. Now they win the CUSA West. This defense hasn't given up more than 21 points outside of Southern Miss in 2 months. And now you're getting 16.5 points to an inconsistent offense in Texas A&M. I know A&M's defense is going to be something UAB has not seen, so I think it is going to be a struggle for Spencer Brown and UAB to manufacture points. But I think their defense can keep them in this game. And 16.5 points, way too many points. I think this is all about SEC and CUSA. I'll take UAB to make this game really interesting in the fourth quarter. I don't know how motivated Texas A&M will be. You know, it took them until, you know, midway through the fourth quarter to really get it going against Ole Miss. And Kellen Mond is a quarterback that still can make some mistakes. So I like UAB a lot in this matchup.
Yeah, especially if they get hit in the mouth and it's late in the game and UAB's still in it. What's the motivation for Texas A&M? It will be a huge motivating factor for UAB to keep this going and keep an outside chance of a New Year's Six Bowl alive if there's a little chaos.
Well, that's a couple of things to look at. Look, I think UAB is squarely your favorite now to win the CUSA championship. But if you're able to win this game, there is a chance this team goes 12-1 into whatever bowl game it is. And not only does this lock down a signature win over an SEC school for Bill Clark, it also locks him into 1, 2, or 3 of the Coach of the Year finalists.
That's our upset alert, our spotlight on Tuesdays, brought to you by our friends at Baumhauer. Just what the SEC doesn't want on a yucky schedule weekend is to have two of their teams on upset alert on our show. UAB, Texas A&M, Middle Tennessee, and Kentucky, and Brown's got Syracuse and Notre Dame. Here is Bill Clark talking about his defense at UAB, nationally recognized, battling SEC's Texas A&M at Kyle Field.
I mean, they've got a dynamic quarterback, you know, skill everywhere. Probably, I mean, no doubt the best running back we've seen other than what we see in practice against our own self. I mean, this guy is just electric. And then their scheme is really good. So it's going to be a good test for our defense again. But I do think when you play good defense, that travels on the road really well.
Absolutely. That's Bill Clark getting ready for the trip to College Station. Now, with the passing of Stan Lee, we've been talking comics this morning a little bit, which got me to thinking about the Bat Cave and how it was the original man cave with all the TV screens. He had down there the monitor, so we asked the question, did Batman actually bet? Did he gamble on games while in the Bat Cave? And you guys are voting fast there. 66% of you say absolutely yes, that Batman would wager on football and basketball games.
I wonder if he played the favorites. If he was, do you think he was a layman?
He was not a layman.
You don't think so? You think Batman was a sharp?
They said they're pretty sure that's what the red phone was for in the Batcave.
Straight to Vegas?
Straight to the man. This morning, a low ceiling with clouds out there and some rain as you make your way in on the 280. Wow.
If you're trying to land at Birmingham Airport, it's going to be tough.
The clouds are hanging low, Rocky.
Yes,
Mario.
A low ceiling.
I know. That's weird.
There's a nautical wind warning for all you boatsmen.
You're out on the lake today as well. All right, so here's the deal. When you look at fan bases around the country, and in our states specifically, when people were looking at Gus Malzahn's future when they had lost two in a row and had lost to Tennessee, you had a lot of joking jocularity from Alabama fans. Oh, I wish they'd sign him to a new 7-year contract. Let's just keep that contract rolling around. Do you think Alabama is the only fan base in the country who wants their rival coach to stay where they are right now? Because most Alabama fans, it seems anyway, are very comfortable with Gus Malzahn at Auburn, even though he's beaten them twice. Do you think Alabama's the only ones in the country?
No, I think there's a lot of fan bases right now that are very content with their rival's head coach right now. And, you know, not only can you take this to Alabama, I guarantee if you go to Athens and you ask Georgia fans, although he beat them last year, you ask Georgia fans how they feel about Gus Malzahn, they're very, very comfortable and content with Gus being the head coach at Auburn.
I think if you do this at Georgia, though, you've got to ask them how they feel about Dan Mullen.
I think they're a little nervous.
I think they were fine with McElwain there. Oh, yeah. I think they were fine with Muschamp there. But they do not like – I think Dan Mullen being there makes them nervous
Johnson being there.
Yeah.
But the one guy that bothers Georgia, that fan base right now, would be Dan Mullen.
Yep.
So let's bounce around the country. Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma, whether he's off to the NFL, we'll see. But right now at Oklahoma, do you think he likes having Mike Gundy there?
No, I mean, they were within a 2-point conversion and knocking him out of the college football playoff.
Yeah,
and
but Mike Gundy's now 2-12 in Bedlam, so I don't think he has a problem with that. I mean, Mike Gundy's just a leather skin dude that can't win Bedlam.
Greasy mullet. You're right, he can't win Bedlam. I guess my point is he just plays that system that it feels like he could win it any year, even though he doesn't.
Yeah, 48-47. They play the same game every year, it seems. While we're on Gundy, before we move to think some more rivals, Rockstar Cut 8. This is why I think if you're Lincoln Riley, you like Mike Gundy being in Stillwater, because football and preparing for the next game never really seems to be top priority for Mike Gundy. Yesterday he went on, the question was about modern day transfers. Here's Mike Gundy.
Well, I think we live in a world where people are non-committal. We allow liberalism to say, hey, I could just do what I want and I don't have to really be tough and fight through it. And you see that with young people because it's an option they're given. We weren't given that option when we were growing up. We were told what to do. We did it the right way, or you go figure it out on your own. In the world today, there's a lot of entitlement. I'm a firm believer in the snowflake. I think it's setting there. And I'm not talking about Tabo. Tabo and I have had multiple good talks. I'm talking about every millennial young person, Generation Z, I think is what they call them. That's the world we live in, because if they say, well, it's a little bit hard, then we say, okay, well, let's go try something else. Versus, hey, let's bear down and let's fight through this. So you see a lot of that nowadays. And that doesn't have anything to do with Tabo or McCleskey or anybody that's been on the portal here. That's just in general in society. Even if you're working down here at Walmart, if your boss gets after you and tells you that you're not doing a good job, you may go home and cry and tell your mom, and your mom may say it's okay.
Mike Gundy running for office in a red state very soon.
What was the question?
It sounded like he's at a fraternity. Yo, Tabo and McCleskey. It's not about them.
This is a guy that fired his contractor for wearing an Oklahoma shirt.
That is true.
Yeah, portal is the transfer portal where the guys get on and make their indication where they may be transferring out.
It's not what he said is not entirely wrong.
No.
I just, the last group of people I want telling me about seeing through commitments as college football coaches.
Yeah.
Even though Gundy, to his credit, has stuck it out at Oak State. Excuse me. He's been there a very long time. College football coaches generally lose their footing when they start talking about seeing out commitments. Yeah,
my point on this is that Mike Gundy is always up for a battle that something is more important than winning the next game for Oklahoma State. Mike Gundy's got a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah,
his hair and everything else. So I think Lincoln Riley is 100% okay with Mike Gundy being at Oklahoma State.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Now, the guy that I guess he's a little nervous because he's 1-1 against now would be Tom Herman at Texas. And, you know, look, say what you want about Tom Herman, and this is a team that is underachieved, probably sitting at 7-3 right now. But still, I think with that program and with Tom Herman and his energy, that's a guy that Lincoln Riley's not really sure about right now. And a guy that probably does strike a little fear in that Oklahoma fan base.
All right. Elsewhere around the country, rivals who are pretty happy, pretty comfortable.
Can we just go ACC? Well, I don't think Dabo is afraid of anybody right now.
There's nobody in the whole ACC.
But his rival is Will Muschamp. I think he's comfortable in the Muschamp, right? Is there anything that tells you Muschamp's going to build a dynasty at South Carolina?
Well, Muschamp and Willie Taggart. I mean, in order for each and every year Clemson to get back to a college football playoff, sometimes they're given one game that they can drop. I don't know when that's going to happen in the near future. I don't really see in the next – would you guys be shocked in the next 3 or 4 years if they drop 2 ACC games in a year? That seems like a lot.
I mean, Muschamp has shown his track record to be a really average head football coach, right? We don't have Taggart's full track record right now. It's not a good one, but I don't think we can totally judge him because he's bounced around so much. But we've seen enough of Muschamp. He's a really average head football coach, really average. I mean, he's a 8-win guy.
I think that's a fair assessment.
Yeah. So I don't, and Dabo is well above average. I don't think worries about Muschamp one bit.
Obviously, Harbaugh and Urban are big, you know, head-banging against the wall kind of guys. They seem to not be comfortable with the other.
Well, I don't know. That's one I was going to bring up. If Harbaugh loses this year, I don't think Urban sweats him at all, because if Harbaugh can't beat him with this team, how's he going to beat him?
Yeah, I would agree with that. Then it really becomes between the ears.
Yeah.
I mean, this is one of those you've got to be able to get. Now, Harbaugh was able to get by D'Antonio, and that's one of those rivalry games. But the big one, obviously, is the game, and that's coming up in a couple of weeks. And if you can't beat Ohio State this year the way you're trending, I agree with Brown. I think it becomes a mental block, and, you know, Urban Meyer probably kind of laughs secretly about Jim Harbaugh.
Okay, so let's go to the ones who are comfortable. Is there another high profile coach who is okay with good old rival coach being where he is?
Okay, well, you tell me right now, Chris Peterson in the Pac-12, and I don't know. I guess Oregon and Washington State and Stanford are their rivals.
Stanford, Oregon would be their two biggest rivals, and Washington State, obviously.
Yeah,
those three.
I think Chris Peterson's very, very content with Mike Leach, although Mike Leach obviously overcoaches.
How can he be okay with Mike Leach? Because that's the kind of guy that would scare me.
He seems to win that game every year. I could be wrong there.
But, you know, I'm sitting here at 25 in the last college football playoff rankings, looking up at Washington State at number 8. And I'm like, how is he doing that? I recruit better than him.
Yeah, but again, this is a game that Washington can win in Pullman and can go back to a Pac-12 championship game. You got it over there, Brown?
I'm pulling it up right now. Washington v. Washington State.
I think he's lost the Apple Cup once.
Now, how many has he coached in, though? He hasn't been there that long, has he?
He's been there 4 years, 5 years.
The last time they lost the Apple Cup was 2012 in Pullman.
Yeah, so he's never lost.
Yeah, 13, 14, 15, 16, and 17, they've won.
And I know he's not scared of Mario Cristobal.
Well, Mario Cristobal just beat him this year.
And is having, if everyone signs on December 19th, having a great recruiting run.
Yeah, I don't think I would agree with you on that one. Cristobal just beat him, 30-27.
I get that. I mean, one game situation in season.
Well, the only time they played.
I know, but that was that overtime. He's sitting at 3-4 in the Pac-12 right now with an elite quarterback.
I know. Well,
I don't think there's anyone scared of Mario Cristobal right now.
Okay. They've played once, and Cristobal's won it.
Now, David Shaw, I guess, is a guy you got a lot of respect for. He can never seem to get over that hump as far as getting to a college football playoff.
Shaw doesn't scare me.
Yeah. Is there another one in the country that jumps out at you? I mean, I know it seems like everyone piles on Gus in this discussion here, but my goodness, Gus has just recently beat Georgia and Alabama, so I don't know if that's totally fair. I can see it from the Dabo point of view. Dabo seems to have it made in the shade right now.
Do you think Joe Moorhead and Matt Luke are both okay with each other?
Yeah, I do. I don't think either one's got strong feelings. They haven't even faced off yet.
Yeah, that rivalry battle – took a big step down in coaching when Hugh Freeze and Dan Mullen left.
Yeah, it was actually pretty good at one point, wasn't it?
A little fiery there.
Yeah.
I mean, USC, obviously, you know, Clay Helton's not going to strike fear to Chip Kelly.
I think anybody wants Clay Helton to be the USC
but
coach.
But, you know, the first battle for the victory bell with Chip Kelly, I mean, I lean that UCLA's going to win that game. They're a slight underdog, but the way those teams are playing right now.
Boy, that would be a bad loss. UCLA has been a very, very average team, or worse than average, with Spada at quarterback.
Well, you know, that would get USC, it would drop them to 5-6 with one game remaining to actually get to bowl eligibility, and that game would be against Notre Dame.
Woo! NASCAR season wraps up this weekend down in Homestead. Your betting favorites to win the championship, Kevin Harvick and Kyle Busch, 11-4 odds out in Vegas. Martin Truex Jr., 6-1. Joey Logano, 10-1. They race for the NASCAR championship this Sunday on NBC at Homestead.
Well, it's a low ceiling out there, Rockstar. Makes it tough to drive, so you're going to cheer people up with their viewing menu. It's presented by Phone Restore.
Got a three things for you tonight. On IFC at 7 p.m. tonight, you got the 40-year-old virgin, which I think Steve Carell is hosting Saturday Night Live this weekend.
Oh, really?
Second up, on 7 p.m., good friend of the show on Cinemax, Chris Kattan, one of the best guests we've ever had. One of his Hollywood major blockbusters, Corky Romano.
What is he really known for, though?
Probably Corky Romano or...
what was the Night at the Roxbury?
Not the Roxbury, but that was after his SNL skits. He didn't like talking about SNL.
Now he doesn't really want to talk about Saturday Night Live.
At 9 p.m. on HBO, next week is the big week. 24/7, it starts tonight. The match, Tiger versus Phil.
Look out.
Boy, they are hyping this thing
up. I'm so excited. I'm pumped.
The price came in lower than initially expected, too. It's only like $19.95, I think.
I was going to say, you give it to me free, I'll tune in and watch a little bit, but there is not a chance I'm paying a dime for that.
Well, I forgot you had to pay for it.
Yeah, and it's on Black Friday, too, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
It's the match, Dunaway.
Yeah, they should have done this between SEC Championship and Christmas.
You can't match up with football in this thing.
Yeah.
No.
Bad choice on their part.
Agreed.
Today, the Bengals are announcing that Marvin Lewis has officially announced Hugh Jackson back on the coaching staff there at Cincinnati. Boy, I tell you what.
You never stay unemployed in the NFL, do you?
You cannot.
Marvin Lewis, like, you fire me, you got Hugh as your interim.
That's your warning.
And the SEC basketball tournament is going to stay in Nashville. That came from the Tennessean yesterday and it confirmed by other reports last night. And Nashville will host that event through 2035. They got one more event outside of Nashville, but it's going to be all the other years there in Nashville through 2035. I think that's a fantastic move for SEC basketball. Nashville should be the host of that tournament every year, like Atlanta is for football, and just lock those in, and that's where everybody goes.
Well, they threw St. Louis the bone when Missouri came in, and that felt... No, it felt bad.
Well, it felt forced, and I think we'll see the same thing with Dallas. I would have gotten one until we get this announcement here. But talking to some Kentucky fans I met a couple of weeks ago, they said that Nashville by far is their favorite destination for the SEC championship.
Yeah, I think I agree with Jim on this one. Much in the way Atlanta should never lose the SEC football championship game, Nashville should never lose the basketball. I mean, it should just be the way it is. You understand you're playing to get to Atlanta and you're playing to get to Nashville.
In football, Arkansas needs one more win, either at Mississippi State or home to Missouri in their rivalry game. To avoid what, guys?
To avoid
going defeated in the SEC.
I don't know why I went 1970s game show on you all of a second.
To avoid going defeated
avoid
in the SEC.
Being killed by a meteor.
To avoid the first 10-loss season in program history.
Well, I hate it for them.
I think all those that you guys said was true as well.
Yes, they've never been hit by a meteor as far as I know.
But that was not the... show me the answer. It was the number one answer on the Family Feud. First 10-loss season.
In school history, huh?
School history.
I don't see them beating State or Missouri on the road. I don't know about you guys.
I don't either. It looks like they're heading to a little history there in Fayetteville. UAB getting ready to travel to play Texas A&M. Lance has UAB picking them in his upset alert over the Aggies. Here's Bill Clark about the trip to College Station.
You know, there's a reason those teams are pretty successful at home, you know, because it's such a big advantage. Their crowd does such a good job. But I like our group, you know. I like how they compete and how they play. And, you know, we're just going to go take our chances. And I don't know if I ever really have fun. You know, people say go have fun. I don't know if that's the right word for it. But, I do think we're looking forward to going to compete.
That's Bill Clark yesterday. You can hear our interview with Tom Luganville right now at jocksfm.com. And what Luke thinks about that team traveling down to play Texas A&M. Basketball last night, Samford beat Kennesaw State 74-60. Samford's off to a 3-0 start. Josh Sharkey, 12 points, 10 assists in that game. Penn State beat Jack State. UAP pull out. Duke, Kansas, Gonzaga, Virginia, and Tennessee in the top five. Auburn's up two spots to number nine. Mississippi State, 17. LSU's 22. Basketball tonight, Memphis and LSU at 6 o'clock on the SEC Network. Georgia Tech and Tennessee, 8 o'clock on ESPN2. A couple of cool things to watch, and those are your headlines. All right, Brownie, you've been polling and talking with the folks on Twitter about Kelly Bryant, and I told you he's going to make his second visit to Auburn. Arkansas's in the mix, a couple of other schools he's visited. December 4th is the date Kelly Bryant, the one-time Clemson quarterback, led him to the college football playoffs, is going to make his announcement on his school. How do Auburn fans feel about the possibility of Kelly Bryant being at Auburn?
It hasn't trended well for that idea. Jeremy says it's hard to build consistency with transfers. This program is long overdue to develop the players they have. What kind of message does this send to future prospects?
And I agree with a couple of sentiments there. You look at Nick Marshall, he comes in as a JUCO transfer. He was really good first year. He was good second year, but not as good as the first year.
But at least you were going to get him 2 years.
Yeah, with Kelly Bryant,
1 year.
It's a one and done. I mean, this guy that's got experience at a championship level, but what does it say to 18 and 19-year-olds when you continue to go out and get guys like this?
Rapp says he will make them a top 10 team immediately. Not that he's good, but he fits the Gus offense perfectly. Just watch.
Can I just ask you, though? Your biggest rival is Alabama, right? And Georgia plays a lot like Alabama. So Georgia and Alabama are your two biggest games. When Kelly Bryant had Clemson in the semifinals, did it look like he had the skill set that was good against Alabama?
I would say no.
No.
You know what I'm saying?
No.
I mean, he was a non-factor, and he really was the difference. When you look at personnel, everyone outside of the quarterback position, he could do nothing against that Alabama defense. And, you know, in last year, when you're looking for a mobile quarterback that can do it both ways, he's a guy that rushed for 665 yards in 2017 with 11 touchdowns. But against that Alabama defense, he could do absolutely nothing.
And with all due respect to Kelly Bryant, he's not Cam Newton. And he's not Nick Marshall.
No.
He's neither one of those guys. Those guys were dynamic. And you may say, well, Jim, you didn't think Nick Marshall was going to be that when he got to Auburn.
Well, I didn't. No.
I did not. But he ended up being that. Can you see Gus Malzahn's scheme raising Kelly Bryant up that much? Maybe so. Maybe so. Is Gus's system going to be that much better than what he's playing in under Dabo and those guys at Clemson?
No. Sarcastic Barner. I wouldn't mind it as long as Gus is not developing him. You'll find a theme here about Gus developing quarterbacks. That's what even the ones that are like, I'm cool with him coming, are concerned about the fact that Gus Malzahn doesn't seem like he can develop any quarterbacks. Madison, if Kelly Bryant goes to Auburn, all that will happen is he'll join the list of undeveloped quarterbacks under Gus. Names like Jeremy Johnson, JF3, and Jarrett Stidham.
Yeah, Gus has got a bad track record when it comes to quarterbacks. And you look at Kelly Bryant just real quick against Alabama in that semifinal game. 18 of 36, completes 50% of his passes, 124 yards, zero touchdowns, two interceptions, 19 carries, 19 yards.
With elite talent around him. Yep. I mean, that was a college football playoff.
Six total points.
P.O. Dobby says it will give Gus another year if he catches lightning in a bottle. So you got a little bit of that, too. I don't want him because, you know, you might run into the Nick Marshall where he catches lightning in a bottle, has a tremendous year, and it really all it does is extend Gus Malzahn. Albie 61, nope, I would love to see him develop Gatewood, Nix, etc. I don't think he's capable of doing that, though.
Yeah, I'm in Camp Bo Nix, but we'll see if, you know, I'm right about that. I guess you can only play this 1 year at a time. And if you get a guy like Kelly Bryant or a different transfer guy, that's just you play one season,
yeah.
You don't worry about the next season. But having a true freshman come in like Bo Nix or anyone else that you recruit, knowing you got a second or a third year out there, you never really think more than 3 years. I'm sure that has to be a positive.
Yeah, right? Like you're saying, because Kyle says 100% he wants him. He's better than Malik Willis and Joey Gatewood. I think we can assume that, right? Yeah, I mean, I think we can assume he's better than Malik Willis and Joey Gatewood.
But here's the deal, guys, Brown. I mean, what are they going to do with with Jared Stidham? Is he going to leave?
Well, and that's what some people pointed that out, too. I guess we're just assuming Jared Stidham's going to the draft again?
Maybe. Maybe.
Well, I mean, what?
I guess he's transferring.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what most people assume, is he's either in the draft or transferring, but he's not back. Kyle says this, 100% he's better than Willis and Gatewood. If Bo Nix beats him out, that's just great news. If fifth-year Brian is better than Nix, Nix gets a year to develop.
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of agree with that. I totally understand, though.
I just always look at it, Brown, that if I'm a transfer guy, I'm not going somewhere unless I'm not going to Keller Chris this thing up. I'm not going to go to Tennessee to be QB2.
Well, if I'm an Auburn fan, I would be excited if Kelly Bryant was a guy that was a factor against the team you need to beat in Alabama.
Like if he had slayed Alabama in that playoffs game,
but
right?
I think everybody forgets this because of how Alabama dominated Clemson. Clemson was the number one seed and the favorite going into the college football playoff last year to win the national championship.
And it was not even close. Charles says this, and I wonder how many people feel this way. No, he quit on his teammates at Clemson and walked away. It's pathetic. I wonder how many people would feel that way.
Interesting tweets rolling in at Jock's Roundtable. Always ready for the input there. Bobby says, if we're stuck with Gus another year, he is most successful with quarterbacks who are developed by other people. I don't want true freshman Bo Nix ruined by Gus. So bring on Kelly Bryant, and let's get another 4-loss season out of the way so he can make the transition. If I asked you guys the most exciting conference of the Power Five to watch week in and week out. I'm at games more than you guys are. A lot of you watch games. We'll put that in a poll question coming up. But think about that. I'll ask that on the other side. Right now, phone calls on the Auburn football side. Jeff on a cell phone starts us off. Hey, Jeff, how are you?
Good morning, guys.
Hey, Jeff.
If I were Chad Morris, I'd be the one lobbying hardest for him because that would give him a leg up. On 1 year to give him time to get more recruits in.
I think that's exactly what's happening, to be honest with you, Jeff. I think
it was his first visit, right? Yeah. Was to Arkansas.
And he's got history with him, though they were never at Clemson at the same time.
I give him the easy games, it'd be winners. And say he gives up with 4 or 5 wins next year, that's progress. And give him more time to get recruits in and get him time to develop another quarterback, give him a base to work off of. If I were Chad Morris, I'd really be putting the screws to it to get him in there.
Jeff, thank you, man. Bruce is down on Pike Road. What's up, Bruce?
Hey, guys.
Hey, Bruce.
Let me just say this as it relates to Kelly Bryant coming to Auburn. Who gives a crap? Let me explain my sentiment.
Okay.
If Gus ever wants to be anything in comparison to who his major rival is, then he needs to recruit quarterbacks to come to Auburn and say, okay, guys, here's what we're going to do. Whoever gives us the best chance to get W's is the guy who's going to play. The reason Jalen Hurts is loved at Alabama is because he was 25-2 as a starter. Then you have a coach who has to look at, I'm down 13-0 in the national championship game, and he has the stones to say, I'm going to go with what I think was a true freshman to come in because that gives me the best chance to win. And now he's loved and will more than likely be your Heisman Trophy winner because he's got 28 touchdown passes to 1 interception because he gives you the best chance to win ball games. Bo Nix, Kelly Bryant, whoever else comes to Auburn, Gus has laid the groundwork to give you evidence that says, I don't know how to develop quarterbacks, so what he needs to do is to determine, what do I need to do to change, to put myself in the position to keep my job, number one, and then to develop myself to become a leader? Because he's not a leader, no matter who the quarterback is. Thank you.
I want to summarize. I hate to put words in Bruce's mouth, and he hung up. But I would want to summarize what he said is, while it might be successful, it's my head coach admitting I can't develop a quarterback. I've got to borrow one. I've got to rent one.
But I think it's also your head coach admitting that next year is so pivotal that he's got to win games.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's a good chance Gus will escape this year based on the fact that $32 million, that buyout drops next year. And I don't think Auburn's going to put up with back-to-back years like we saw this year.
No.
Leroy is next with us on a cell phone. What's up, Leroy?
Hey, how you all doing this morning?
Great. You good?
Fine. I've been talking to y'all for a long time, way before you got the morning slot.
Well, we appreciate it. Thank you for sticking with us.
Ben's my senior citizen there. I ain't gonna call them name. How y'all doing this morning?
Great, thank you.
Doing great. Wait, are you calling me a senior citizen?
No, I'm calling the one that's the OT a senior citizen. I used to get in the back of the truck when they was doing high school football back in the '90s.
Wow.
You know how long ago that's been?
A long time. Long time.
But anyway, back to Auburn and Kelly Bryant. My thing is, his offensive line was recruited for a RPO quarterback, first of all. Secondly, those guys that were recruited, the offensive coordinator apparently, or the offensive line coach, has not gotten them trained to do for a drop back, because Jared Stidham is only going to drop back. He's not going to run. So if I'm a defensive coordinator, the first thing I'm going to do is I'm not going to need a spy on him, you know, because I know he's not going to run, even if he needs 2 yards. Now, yeah. Kelly Bryant in the equation, he'll get 2 yards. I mean, like you said, he lost to Alabama, but Alabama had a great team. We can't take that away from Alabama the year they beat Clemson. If Kelly Bryant goes 1 year and Auburn goes 11-2, the Auburnites are going to forget about whatever, because Jerry Stidham, I mean, bless his heart, he was designed for the professional part of it. But that Kelly Bryant gives them the option, and regardless of your Auburn night or not, that's going to give Gus Malzahn the piece of the puzzle that he needs. He needs somebody that's going to have an option to pass and a great option to run. I mean, what do you guys think?
Thank you, Leroy.
I agree.
Yeah, perfect.
But I think Bo Nix is that guy moving forward. He gives you a little of both.
I think people just don't want to throw a high school freshman.
I see that, Brown, but you know, it's a new era out there.
I know.
We've seen a lot of true freshmen be able to come in and make impacts. You saw it with Fromm last year. You saw it with Tagovailoa in a certain situation last year. Dorian Thompson-Robinson at UCLA. I mean, more and more, it was one of those things that 3-4 years ago you never saw. But these guys are so weathered and they're so media savvy and they come in like 19 and 20 years old.
They do, and Bo Nix is a really good player. And I would say this, if indeed Stidham goes to the NFL or transfers, I think most Auburn fans would be way more comfortable with high school freshman Bo Nix versus Gatewood or Willis.
What's easier to say?
Or Court Zenberg.
Because Gus has got to face this. He is going to be on the hottest of hot seats next year. What is more likely to save his job? Kelly Bryant comes in and goes 9-3, or you start a true freshman in Bo Nix, you show some promise in the second half of the season, you go 6-6 or 7-5.
Well, 6-6 would be tough, but if you're showing me if I'm a believer in Bo Nix, he could save Gus Malzahn's job. There's no doubt.
If I'm 7-5, really 8-4 with Bo Nix as a first year starter, as opposed to 9-3 with a 1 year and done transfer, I'm more excited about 8-4.
I agree.
Bo Nix. I'll ask you the question. Most exciting conference you've watched? Now, not one particular game, but week in, week out, who delivers more excitement for you?
Oh, Dunaway. I mean, this is such a tough question because when you look in the Big 12, you've got two teams that are still in the mix in Oklahoma and West Virginia.
But haven't they provided you really fun
they
games?
Have.
Because Big 12 is the answer, right?
Yeah, it is. I think the two best games I've watched this year, Lance, the two best games, unless I'm missing one, you guys tell me if you think I'm missing one, is Texas, West Virginia, and Bedlam. I think those have been the two most exciting games I've watched this year.
And I thought Texas Tech Texas was fantastic.
No, it was a good game. You're right. There's another one. Texas Oklahoma was pretty entertaining too, but
to me, Ohio State Penn State was the most exciting game of the year.
Yeah, you're right. That one belongs in the discussion. But Bedlam was really good. Texas West Virginia was a terrific game with a fantastic ending. Ohio State Penn State was very, very good. You're correct on that. But I have a hard time thinking another Big Ten game I'd throw in there.
The ACC's been awful.
Yeah, it's one team.
It's been awful. I think the Pac-12's been awful.
In fact, I haven't watched one good ACC game this year. I can't tell you one I've watched I thought was a good
game. The Pac-12 has been really bad, except for Oregon.
Oregon-Stanford was a terrific
game. Oregon-Stanford and then Oregon-Washington. Yeah.
But I think week in and week out, the Big 12 has provided the most excitement.
I agree. I don't know that it's great football, but it's exciting football.
Yeah, and I guess that's because of the offense. All right, four downs time. It's brought to you by our friends at Vulcan Tires. It's our chance to talk about four big topics that's on LT's mind today. Vulcan Tire, always top of mind when you're looking for great tire service.
Yeah, if you're looking for that new set of tires or a place to have your vehicle service, look no further than Vulcan Tire and Automotive, locally owned, independently run. Best tire pricing in Birmingham, it's Vulcan Tire and Automotive.
First down.
If I asked you guys, bigger Group 5 disappointment this year, would you go with the Naval Academy or would you go with Florida Atlantic?
I've gotten so used to Navy being really, really good.
I mean, it's 8 or 9 wins every year.
Yeah, really good, and they are, you know, a 2-win team.
They've lost 7 consecutive games. I never thought I would see that.
They're basically what Army used to be a few years ago. What they've become.
Yeah.
But all that said, the hype behind Florida Atlantic all offseason with that Oklahoma game being out there. If they beat Oklahoma, they could be undefeated. If they lose to Oklahoma, they could be a 1-loss team and be in the mix. They'll beat UCF. They'll do this.
And they've done none of that.
Never on the radar.
Yep. I expected more out of them this year than I did out of Navy, so they're a bigger disappointment.
See, I would go Navy here. I mean, Florida Atlantic's 5-5, and I think they've been a disappointment. I think I kind of waited for the Lane Kiffin thing to implode. I didn't think it would go this far down. But they've still got a chance to go 7-5 this year. Very winnable game this weekend. They've won 2 in a row. And Navy, I just don't understand what's going on.
Yeah, to me, Navy is like when you try to take that bone away from your dog, and he sort of snips you at your hand a little bit. That's disappointing. But I'm more disappointed.
What?
I don't know.
In Florida Atlantic, when you call the dog and he doesn't come at all.
Do people second still down. Give their dogs bones like that?
Yes.
Wow, I'm disappointed he sniffed at me.
Listen, I overbought.
Low ceiling, too.
I overbought at the pet store for my dogs this past time.
Did you get your dog a jacket?
Because I'm. They looked at me after the haircut. They're like, if you're coming home with that haircut, you're going to need a treat for us. I know I bought these big donut-like things, and I never buy the treats. My wife usually picks them up, so I'm there on this day picking them up. And when she's like, that's too big for our dogs. I'm like, no, it's not. They will love this. The big one. I didn't care about the little one. That's not my dog. But
the small debates marriages can get in, right?
So I give it to my man Baxter, and he can't bite it. He can just walk around because his mouth fits right into the hole. So all he can do is walk around with it. But he tries to bite it in half, but it's too big for him. So all he does is take it in the backyard and bury it. And then when I let him out, he'll go out there and dig it up and bury it somewhere else. So it's turned out to be a great toy for him, but he never eats it.
So second down.
Very close.
So the truth of the matter is I did overbuy for the dog.
Was it actual food, though?
Yeah, it's a donut that you can.
He's going to have maggots on it.
Oh,
Maybe.
I'll shut him down. bigger surprise right now on the good side, Syracuse or Washington State?
Washington State. I mean, we talked a lot about the Pac-12 having some contenders. Oregon borderline, Washington definitely, Stanford definitely. We never mentioned Washington State, and they're going to end up winning that conference probably.
You see, I would go Syracuse here just for the fact that the Pac-12 has been so bad it's allowed Washington State to do what they're doing.
What, and the ACC's not bad.
Yeah, but still, Syracuse in year two under Babers to be 8-2 and to be in this situation if they win against Notre Dame this weekend, which Brown thinks they will, they're going to be in the top 10.
What's the best win for Syracuse?
But you know, Syracuse.
I mean, when did I ever get excited about Syracuse?
The best win
year?
For Syracuse was a close loss at Clemson.
You know the last time they were ranked this high?
Who, the Cuse?
Yeah.
Probably under Don McPherson back in the day, right?
1998 with Donovan McNabb.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been 20 years.
I know, but they've bored me into this 8-2 start, and everyone thinks they're going to beat Notre Dame this
Yeah, but
week.
How they lost to Clemson still blows me away.
Yeah, they should have won that
And, you
game.
Know, you're coming off that, and the very next week they lose at Pittsburgh to an improved Pitt team, but you wonder if they weren't so emotionally defeated from that Clemson game, if they don't beat Pittsburgh, and they'd be undefeated right now. I know that sounds weird, and a lot of things had to happen, and they're still sitting there with 2 losses.
Washington State's 9-1 Gardner Minshew is a wonderful story. A guy was going to come to Alabama and be just basically a coach in training and decides, okay, I'll play one more year, and now he's going to be in New York.
It's an incredible
Heisman.
Story.
That's
incredible
an amazing story. Yeah. I'll take Washington State.
Third down.
Who's had the more impressive second year? Which one of these Matts? Matt Luke at Ole Miss or Matt Rhule at Baylor? Both are sitting at 5-5.
I'd say Matt Luke. I don't know. Matt Rhule, man. That was such a disaster he took over.
Well, he took over maybe the worst environment. Yeah. I mean, Penn State was a bad environment. But what was going on with the whole athletic program?
It was a disaster.
And, you know, they go 1-11 and people lost a little confidence in Matt Rhule, who just he kept with his, you know, quote-unquote process. And now they're sitting at 5-5.
He's won 3 conference games Matt Rhule has. So that's something. Just one for Matt Luke. At 1-5.
Both are in tough jobs right now.
Yeah, they really are.
And I think I had them both going 6-6.
So they both could
still,
do that.
Both
yeah.
still have a chance to do that. But I'm going to say Matt Rhule doing slightly a better job.
I would agree with you guys.
Yeah.
Fourth down.
Who plays in their conference championship game next? Florida, Texas, or USC? Florida, Texas, USC.
I'll say Texas only because there are no divisions. All you got to do is finish second.
Two out of nine.
Yeah.
But you would say the easiest route now, right now would be the Pac-12 South.
I would, but the Pac-12 South is a total train wreck.
I'll go with Texas because the rebuild seems to be less. And then I would go USC because of the easy path. And then,
yeah, the problem with Florida, and I think we'll see Florida there in the next couple of years, it's Georgia. You know, you don't?
I don't. I think it's Georgia.
Well, I think Georgia's going to be 3 out of 4 years, but I think Dan Mullen's good enough to get them there every 4 years.
Maybe.
And if he's not, watch out.
Maybe. That's Four Downs brought to you by Vulcan Tires. John in Clanton, before we get to trash on the table. Hey, John, how are you?
Hey, guys.
Hey, John.
Fan of the show.
Thank you, buddy.
I just got a comment, and I'll hang up and listen. Going to your Auburn quarterback scenario, I think we all can agree Chip Lindsey being your offensive coordinator, if he is your offensive coordinator now, he's been running the same plays we were running since 2013, which I know he wasn't offensive coordinator.
Yeah, that would seem odd, wouldn't it, that he's running a wholly different set of plays than he's ever run anywhere else he's been?
Right, yeah. I've been watching the same 8 or 9 plays since 2013. But what I'm getting at is I'd love to have Bryant and Nix, but if you was to make a splash and get an offensive coordinator like a Hugh Freeze, I think Hugh Freeze would rather go with a Bo Nix type than a Kelly Bryant, because I think you saw the most out of Kelly Bryant when he was on a Dabo Sweeney-led Clemson team.
Yeah, I think I would agree. I think if you gave Freeze the option, now you would also have to tell Freeze, you know, you're going to have 2 or 3 years with this kid. I don't think Freeze would want him just for the 1 year.
Would you not right now put odds, and I know it's impossible to predict assistant coaching moves, but don't you feel pretty good about Hugh Freeze being in Auburn next year?
I don't know, Jim, only because I know it's an obvious fit, but you have to look at it from Hugh Freeze's perspective. What talent am I going to be able to coach, and is this going to be a one-year deal for me?
Yeah, and I still look at it from the other standpoint of Gus Malzahn. Malzahn? Yeah.
Who are you, Gary Danielson all of a sudden?
Yes. No,
thank you,
Vern. I'm a little confused on why he would bring in another ego when he might be going out next year. And there seems like to be a lot of pressure on Malzahn if he's to bring in a guy like Hugh Freeze. Do you guys not agree with that? I mean, that is two A-type personalities.
Yep.
And, you know, whose offense is it going to be?
David says the MAC has been the most entertaining than the Power 5 conferences this year. I disagree.
Jim said Saturday football.
Yeah, Saturday football. Okay, the easier story first. Mike McIntyre out at Colorado, according to reports. We knew that was coming earlier in the show at some point. It has happened quickly this morning out in the Mile High City. So tell me, what do you think initially of Mike McIntyre out at Colorado?
Well, I mean, it's just crazy to think that he was the National Coach of the Year 2 years ago. And started this year 5-0. I guess, guys, that ultimately when you look back, when you write the epitaph for his career here, it's going to be that Oregon State game, isn't it? They were up, what, 31-3 in that game and ended up losing into overtime? They were 5-0 at the time, and they have not recovered from that. And
no,
I guess that's
really
what's going to get them fired.
And again, Laviska Shenault, if you've watched this kid play, I mean, he is one of the better electrifying receivers. He'll play on Sundays. And when he goes down with the injury, they haven't been the same. And he comes back this year and goes for about 100-plus combined yards. But it's just been a little bit different, and they are struggling offensively, and I didn't think they would with Steven Montez with the experience they had at quarterback. But I do believe this is a pretty good job. You know, it's not Louisville, but I think it's right behind Louisville. But these are those type of jobs that will make Group 5 coaches take a hard look at leaving wherever they are.
All right. Now, the more complicated story, Brown, is the next from Brett McMurphy, as he writes at the stadium today. The next story in the cover-up, it appears, of Urban Meyer and his coaching tenure in college football.
This is a very long story from Stadium. Watch Stadium.com. We've tweeted it out. Brett McMurphy has written it. But McMurphy tweet, let me just read the tweet to you. Multiple sources have told Watch Stadium that Urban Meyer helped cover up a racially charged practice altercation between former assistant Zach Smith and former Buckeye Trayvon Grimes in 2017. Ohio State admits the interaction between Smith and Grimes, but denies the racial slur. It has become a very, he said, discussion here. As you read the story, no one will corroborate on the record that it happened. McMurphy has people off the record that say Zach Smith used the N-word, but you get the feeling those people are still part of the Ohio State program, so they're not willing to talk on the record. Ohio State has admitted it on altercation, denies the use of the N-word by Zach Smith.
Can I ask you guys this? And I like Brett McMurphy.
Yeah, and I want to add one more thing to this. No. I'm going to say where Meyer comes into this is that he traveled to a Fort Lauderdale St. Thomas Aquinas High School after the transfer of the player in question here, canceled his media availability, did it on a game week, and according to the father of the player, that the player threatened them to go public with the altercation and racial slur because he felt that he had been threatened by Zach Smith, and Meyer was there to basically talk him down off the ledge. Say, yeah. Don't go public with this. You know,
another Zach Smith
right.
anger issue situation there.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it
does say they kept the roommate from speaking to the media as well.
Right.
Throughout the entire season.
I like Brett McMurphy. I know you guys do. He's well respected. I don't know how much more Zach Smith stuff we need. He's become irrelevant. I don't know if he'll ever coach again. And this just seems to be, look, the guy has obviously got some personal demons and stuff that he's going to have to work out amongst himself and amongst his family. And I don't know why we continue to pile on Zach Smith. I mean, is this stuff even interesting anymore?
Well, this is more Urban Meyer.
Yeah, I think this is more pointing at what Urban was doing.
But I get that.
Covering this guy up.
And I get ultimately this is the head of the snake. But at the same time, the guy that is taking the direct fire is Zach Smith.
Yeah. I mean, this is Urban Meyer. Anything that comes out of this is going to be Urban Meyer enabling Zach Smith. This continues to make Urban Meyer look bad. And this is going back to summer, I think, what you worried about if you're Ohio State. Obviously, Urban Meyer kept his job. But if you're Ohio State, you worried about the drip, drip, drip out of the faucet. Our story's going to keep dripping. And it looked like maybe it had dried up. But now here we are in November with another story coming out. And I think that's your concern if you're Ohio State. What else, A, does McMurphy know, or B, what is he working on right now that they don't even know exists, maybe? Or they know exists and they fear if it got out.
You know, aren't you a little surprised in today's age where you've got big-time boosters that have a ton of money and Urban Meyer seems to be a guy that's going to win you championships in Columbus? How one of these guys hasn't gone to Brett McMurphy early in the process and said, look, I don't know what it's going to cost. You're not employed right now. So how big does the check need to be?
That Brett McMurphy isn't the biggest landowner in Columbus, Ohio now.
We'll give you $1 million cash. You know, let's burn all this evidence.
The story simply starts off with a quote from the father of Trayvon Grimes, who says, thank you, sir, for your interest in my son's story. I'm sure Trayvon will be honored to have you write a story on him. However, as his father, I can't wait for that one reporter who cares about the truth and where it came from.
Mm.
And that gets you into the story. The next that Urban Meyer must now deal with as they prepare for a tricky game on the road this week at Maryland, 11 o'clock on ABC, and then, of course, the game as they play host to Michigan in 2 weeks. Update you on our Dreamland Barbecue poll questions. Several of them out there. I'm most interested on, was Batman an addictive football gambler because he had the original man cave down there with all those monitors?
Okay, we'll get to that one. First, Eli Manning, is he a Hall of Famer because of a career accomplishment, name recognition, or he's not a Hall of Famer? 50% say career accomplishment, 17% name recognition, 33% say he's not a Hall of Famer.
Oh, he's a Hall of Famer.
I would agree.
Yeah. Two-time Super Bowl champion.
But I think it is name recognition.
Stan Lee's best character, 54% say Spider-Man, 22% Iron Man,
easy.
16% Captain America, 8% say the Hulk.
Easy Spider-Man. Hulk may be my least favorite character ever.
Have you seen the new Spider-Man? Tom Holland is by far the best Spider-Man, though.
Did Batman bet on games in the Batcave? 67% say yes, Batman bet on games in the Batcave. 33% say no.
Yeah, I say no. Again, his thing was he was out for organized crime in Gotham City. Organized crime obviously would be the book taking the bets. And his one vice, his biggest vice, was women.
But he never,
two or three at a time.
But he never took down, you know, the Penguin or all of them. They always seemed like they survived and kept their operations going. So I think he got behind with a man. He would let him off the hook.
From yesterday,
but
by
Alfred
the way,
would have been the one calling it in.
That's true. From yesterday, Nashville Hot Chicken, 48% say overrated, 7% say underrated, 45% say properly rated.
Properly rated.
I would agree with properly rated.
All right. Last big thing today brought to you by ERA. Everyone says Alabama's line needs to protect Tua more. that they're not doing their job. At least that's what some fans and some media people say. Here's what Jonah Williams has to say.
Not taking the blame off the O-line, there's certainly times that we could have done a better job, but I think that it's, you know, a little bit naive to sit there and watch and say the O-line's not blocking their assignments because you guys don't know what the assignments are.
He's right.
He's right. Salty, but right.
Yes, I mean, that is correct.
Cole, obviously, on three-man front after us, he knows the assignments and such like that. Well, but for the layman who watches football, we understand quarterback, good pass, bad pass. We understand receiving and running and knocking down a pass and that. But offensive line is the one thing we don't understand.
Can I give you a great example of what fancy versus reality? Felipe Franks says the fourth down play he scored the touchdown on that won the game, that when he looked to the sidelines, he couldn't find the signaler and he knew the play clock was running down. So he just called a play off his wrist from the goal line portion of the wrist. He said, I knew the play would come from that portion, so I just picked the one I like best.
Yeah.
Now, if that play doesn't work, you killed Dan Mullen for the play call. Felipe Franks didn't even know the play call.
Right.
He was just out there on the field winging it.
But Dan Mullen probably got credit on the broadcast.
Bingo.
What a great play call.
Yeah, man, that was a good play call.
Perfect. I mean, that guy can coach. What a great play call.
It's funny, isn't it?
It is. It is absolutely funny, the way fans are. Did you have a problem with him telling the crowd to hush
that's his a bad own
fans?
Look. It's a bad look. All the way around, it's a
they
bad look.
They booed him the whole game.
I know, but you got to endure it. I mean, he's not playing well right now. You guys think any change 1-6?
Do you?
Nope.
I don't either. Yeah. I think it'd be so easy.
I think Oklahoma could drop and West Virginia could jump Oklahoma based on the domination
but
of TCU.
But it's irrelevant. That's irrelevant.
It doesn't matter.
That'd be the only thing.
The housing market is hot. There are three times more buyers than sellers. It's more important now than ever to make sure you have your financing in place before you even find the house. Get pre-approved today at thehomeloanexpert.com. The Home Loan Expert, LLC.